Welcome to the Sex Magic series. Today I am talking with Veronica Monet, sexologist. And we've just been briefly chatting before the session here about a whole bunch of things. And we just decided to jump in and get recorded because we're starting to go down a rabbit hole. But really, she focuses on talking about really living a shame-free life. And her website, The Shame-Free Zone, where you know you can find a lot of information on her, really allows you to connect intimately with yourself and connect deeply with your partner. So hello, Veronica. I'm so happy you're here.
I'm so glad I'm here too. Glad I made it.
Yes. If you wanted to share with everyone kind of what was showing up.
Oh, yeah. Some person I passed very politely on the road decided to rage against me for about 4 miles or so. And it was a little unnerving. So, and, you know, this is one of the things too, I just want to call out about shame. If you have been a target of any kind of bullying or hate crime or sexism, racism, you know, prejudice against you because of your gender identity or your sexual orientation, all of these things have a way of evoking shame in us because that's the intention. The intention is to shame us. And the human response a lot of times is to try to deflect that, say we don't, you know, care, or to push it back on somebody else or even the person who's trying to shame us. And I don't find that those strategies work very well. I mean, in the short term, it might feel good, but they're not sustainable. So I know there's two places I go. I can't always do the compassion thing for people that are perpetrating against me, but it is an ultimate goal. But the first step really is just grounding myself in who I am. Because when somebody is attacking you in a shaming way for whatever reason, they are projecting their own shame. That's what they're doing. They're finding a way to try to off-gas their own feelings of inadequacy and fear that somebody's going to find out about their deep, dark secrets. And so they find a lot of comfort in attacking other people. And if you know that, and then you know who you are, hopefully that can be the noise. And I think it's important, Jen, that you and I are starting off with this, because this topic, this sacred sex magic topic, can evoke a lot of shame and fear as well. And it's not always something that's easy to talk about. It's not always something that's advisable to talk about. It's, you know, unless you know that you're with safe, supportive people, because we live in a sex negative culture and it's been that way for thousands of years. And people are terrified. I know when I got certified as a sexologist, a lot of people were terrified that I was a sexologist. They didn't know what that is. What does that mean? What do you do? how do you get called something like that? And I mean, it's really just, you know, I'm certified through the American College of Sexologists. I wrote a sex manual about 16 years ago. I am trained in sexuality and I know more about it than your doctor does. That's really all it means. But it's interesting how the word SEX, it activates all of the spam filters. It can get you your stuff banned on Facebook. I mean, you think about it, we just don't have permission to talk about sex. So right off the start, I want to applaud you for taking this topic on.
Thank you, Veronica. Yeah, and it's definitely, like, there's a stigma around sex, right? One that we don't, I think, fully understand, because again, a lot of the things have, I think, been buried for so long. And really understanding, you know, from my standpoint, the spirituality of sex, not just like the physical mechanics, right? Which, you know, it's like, I think we've kind of all figured out how to do it.
I am surprised.
we know the general mechanics, not like, notwithstanding like maybe issues or anything, you know, with that
standpoint. Most people know the general mechanics because it's available online, but I've, you know, some people shame prohibits them from finding out anything at all. It goes in one area.
Okay.
So,
interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I'm talking about sacred sexuality and stepping into sex magic, it's really about this alchemical energy that really gets to move between people. And a lot of the times, you know, to get there, to get to that space, you know, like you mentioned, like being with the safe partners that it's safe to talk about this topic with, getting there, usually we also have to kind of dig through our own shame, our own stuff that starts to come up, like our own resistance for really being truly open and vulnerable in those spaces. And it can be difficult, right? Because you know, we were talking a little bit like beforehand about, you know, the tendency for this culture to be so angry and at the same time, you know, being sex negative and, you know, what the relationship between that could possibly be. And, you know, just like the fear and the anger and all these things that we're seeing, like starting to erupt and how that really starts to play out, not only like in our life, but like also in our bedrooms.
Yes. Well, and it does play out a lot. So I work with couples in long-term relationships. That means they've been together anywhere from 5 to 20 years. And almost none of them can talk to each other about sex, which is fascinating to me. Not even when they're in my office together, I'll say, how does your partner feel about that? And they go, well, I think they feel this way. And I go, well, they're sitting right here. Would you like to ask them? And they'll say, no, you ask them. So. Okay, so we don't know how to talk about this topic. That's one thing. And that's really problematic in long-term relationships, because then we don't get to talk about consent issues. And they come up in long-term relationships. People are doing stuff they don't want to do because they don't want to hurt their partner's feelings and they love them. But, you know, warning, if you're doing things, if you're enduring touch that you don't actually like, you are training your tissues to numb out, which means that eventually you're probably going to lose your sexual desire or at least your orgasmic potential. So we don't want to do that. We want to have healthy boundaries. And nobody teaches us how to have healthy boundaries around sex past the good, bad touch, you know, good touch, bad touch trainings in school that are there now. And I'm grateful for those. But by the time you get to high school and there you got maybe some kind of sex ed if your parents let you go, you are learning about the mechanics and all the diseases and the pregnancy, and nobody's teaching you about pleasure because, newsflash, this country was founded by Puritans and pleasure is a sin. So, so even though this is becoming more and more of a secular society, please take note that all the presidents must praise God and swear on a Bible. That is how this country still operates. So even if you don't go to church, never have, don't care about that, there's ways in which that religiosity of the country, it permeates our relationship to sex and our relationship to ourselves, whether we know it or not. So it's really good to start examining and looking at some of the assumptions that we have. Here's one assumption I want to dispel right out of the gate, and that is that somehow or another spirituality and sexuality are antithetical. So we all know about the esteemed monk who takes on a vow of celibacy. And, you know, we also know about the Catholic priests who do that, and we know how that turned out. So, you know, one of the things that happens when we suppress our sexuality is it can leak out in some very perverse and damaging and sometimes criminal ways. And the other thing is that being somebody who is celibate, I think it has its place. I've been celibate at times for my own personal growth. I'm not opposed to celibacy, but to preach it as some kind of spiritual value, that it's higher than being sexual, is that's patriarchy talking to you. That's not actually what human beings have always believed on this planet. There have been cultures, we've got to go back about 6,000 years before the Bible was written. But if you go back in time, there's cultures that really celebrated sexuality as a way to fertilize the crops, as a way to celebrate spring, as a way to bring peace and harmony to the village. It was a bonding experience. It was an ecstatic experience. If you go to these ancient temples, ancient religious temples in India, their walls are covered with a lot of art that would not make it past the Facebook filters. But ironically enough, because it is ancient, I can put images of that up. But I mean, we're talking about grip sex and anal sex and I'm like a lot of stuff. I think there's some bestiality in there. Just a lot of sex. And so there was a huge celebration of sex. And I'm not saying that all the sex that took place was great and it was elevating. Ancient cultures have done some horrific things like human sacrifice. What I am saying is that because of the way we grow up, the things that we're kind of permeated with in the culture, we tend to energetically hold ourselves in a certain space. So instead of seeing sex as an ascendant energy, as a creative force, as something that can call in the things that you want to bring into your life and also heal things that you want to let go of. And I'll share about how those can happen. We look at it as entertainment, procreation, pair bonding. All those things can have a place in your life, but it's such a, I'm going to say a minuscule amount of what sex potential is. There's a way in which you're just kind of shunting it off to the side, like not the center focus of your life, but the cherry on top, or, you know, it's kind of superfluous. It's something you could probably let go of if you had to. I want to tell you that the vast majority of us probably had our first orgasms before we were born. There's been documentation, not a lot of it because nobody wants to put money into this research, but there is documentation of fetuses, both male and female, masturbating to the point of orgasm in the womb. That says something, doesn't it? About our development as a Homo sapien, as a human being. If you're going to have an orgasm before you take a breath of air, before you have your first sip of mother's milk, isn't it core to your being? Could it be central to your spiritual aspect? And I often like to ask people, what do you think the fetuses are thinking about? I'm pretty sure they're not thinking about the last romantic movie they saw. But I do, and I don't know what they're thinking. And I, you know, I realize some people might say, oh, they're just doing what comes natural. Okay, fine. But I kind of feel like, so I actually believe that we do have a spiritual aspect to us. And I, you know, this is my own personal belief system, but I believe in past lives. I think that when we enter into a body, we're bringing, we're kind of fresh from wherever we came from, which is really spiritually infused. And I like to think that the fetuses are really just recognizing their connection to the divine.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's a great way to even describe sex magic. You know, that is the fundamental goal, is really connecting with that divine essence within yourself through connecting with somebody else. And allowing like the amount of pleasure and a lot of connection and love that you have in your life just to amplify, you know. And that's where like I love in my pleasure practices to really start to notice like where I'm capping my own pleasure, right? Getting honest about at times like how much like I'm willing to open, and use that as a practice to really see how can I really allow myself to be seen more, to be more vulnerable, right? To connect deeper, to get more honest with, you know, how I see myself, who I truly am, like how I'm perceiving the world. And, you know, just that simple act of just, again, connecting with your body and getting to know yourself better, like the profound shifts that can happen in your life.
And I often refer to the lovemaking that I share with my partner, who I consider my sacred twin, as my holy trinity. So just, I'm not actually identified as a Christian, although I was raised as one. But I like to usurp some of the words sometimes. So my trinity is me, my beloved, and the divine. And I'm fascinated because we are on a sacred sexual journey. And one of the things that I am really amazed about is how our bodies can transport us out of our bodies. So there is a point in our lovemaking where we're no longer here. And I definitely feel my communion with the divine. I feel myself go over to the other side. And when I come back, it's like I slept for 100 years or something. I feel so refreshed, so renewed, so at peace with myself, so grounded in my body. And this is, to me, one of the ironies. I think if you are pursuing a sex magic or sacred sexual path, you can start to realize that your body is a way of communing with your spiritual self and with the other side. And you start to get a sense of yourself as being bigger than this body, more than this body. So some of them, you know, what I think about, and no offense to porn, I've actually appeared in some educational pornography years ago, and I've produced some educational pornography years ago. But we live in a pornified culture. And like so many other aspects of our culture, it takes us away from our spiritual essence. It takes us away from our center. It takes us away from who we are. And it puts on us some really phony, superficial stuff like, what do you look like? And I can't tell you how many clients, especially female identified clients, will worry about, am I sweating? Am I making the wrong noise? Do I look fat in this position? I wonder about the expression on my face when I come. And if you're thinking about those things, it's going to limit your ability to really fully realize a sacred path or a sex magic path. And I know this from personal experience. I had some rockin' orgasms on camera, okay? But not the transformative, leave your body, see the other side, merge with your partner kind. So I kind of like to think about sex as it's a choice point. If you just want to do friction and kind of the pornified version, have fun. But if you're on a quest for something deeper, and I think this is what can happen to sexual adventurers, and I've been a sexual adventurer. I've tried a lot of things, most things. And at some point, that's going to kind of wear out. It's kind of like going to the amusement park. You know, there's only so many times you can ride a particular ride until, yeah, I've done that. So what I love about a sacred sex magic path is that it doesn't get old. It instead challenges you. So Jen, what you were talking about, facing how you feel about yourself, can I let go? Can I let my walls down? Can I surrender to this pleasure? That becomes the big challenge. Can I let go of the shame or the fear? The fear that if I were to completely surrender to this, somehow or another, some bad thing's gonna happen or I become bad. And I know for me, I struggle with aspects of me that are like, oh, that's too much pleasure. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating how many human beings suffer from that too much pleasure place. It's like, uh-oh. That's enough. That's enough joy.
This is good enough. We don't have to go any further.
That feels too good. I'm leaving now. yeah. And I definitely bump up against that place in myself all the time. This place that says, oh my God, that's better than I've ever felt before. Okay, bye now. And we're done.
I'm out of here. And again, a lot of it, like you were saying earlier, is because we've been conditioned to believe pleasure is bad, or it's a luxury, or it's, you know, something that's not important, right, to the human condition, which is completely opposite from the case, just from its ability to allow you to, again, center into who you truly are, like knowing your true north, increasing like your confidence, all of these things. But yeah, it's like, I see that constantly, like even in myself, you know, where like you get to this wall and it's like, okay, how much is too much? And it's like,
yeah, and you know, there's an interesting theory about that. I also, and I want to go into that in a minute, but I know that one of the things that I was taught, because I was raised in a conservative Christian cult, that was a doomsday cult, was that pleasure was dangerous. So I have little bells and whistles that go off and say, oh, that's dangerous. And it, literally this cult taught that closing your eyes and breathing was cavorting with the devil. So if I evoke sex magic, if I evoke sacred sexuality, if I go to this place that's very spiritual and very ascendant, I have early training that tells me that somehow or another I am cavorting with the dark side. And I think that's something worth talking about. But before we do, I just want to mention something called an oxytocin set point.
Okay.
So an oxytocin set point is a theory that when we have a traumatic birth, now what would qualify as a traumatic birth depends on who you are, I suppose. But most Western births, unless they were home births, probably have some trauma involved in them. And let me just quickly run down for you. So a C-section is probably traumatic, because you're going to get whisked away from your mom. They're going to cut the umbilical cord right away. They're going to clean you. And it's going to be a little wait before you actually get to bond with your mom. And she's probably kind of out of it, so she's not really meeting you in that place. So that's one. Plus, of course, you don't get all the microbiome that you need when you pass the vaginal canal. So, but let's say it's a vaginal birth. Then there is, did they use forceps? Try not to do that nowadays, but there could be a way in which the doctor's getting impatient and he starts to pull the baby out instead of letting the baby come when it wants to. Cutting the umbilical cord too soon instead of waiting for the baby to bond with the mother in that way, so it's kind of a gradual place. Bright lights, when this baby's been in total darkness, all of a sudden you've got these bright fluorescent lights, which, by the way, nobody likes, even grown-ups, but oh my God, subjecting a baby to that. And then poking their little noses and eyeballs and sticking stuff in them. It's a lot for a little organism that was swaddled in the comfort and the warmth and the beauty of a womb. So, but a birth that's not traumatic, oftentimes it would take place in water, so that the first place the baby's encountering is warm and liquid, and then has a chance maybe to crawl to mom's breast while the umbilical cord is still connected. The theory, and I'm not going to profess that there's any research to back this up, but the theory is that that baby would probably have more tolerance, sorry to use that word, but more tolerance of pleasure. And that the rest of us who didn't have that kind of a birth might be frightened of pleasure because it's not our first experience from having gotten here. So I just wanted to say, you know, if you are a pleasure activist, if you are on a sacred sexual or a sex magic journey, you're charting a way forward for us to have a more peaceful, loving planet. And that's a beautiful calling. But of course, you are going to come up against all kinds of barriers and obstacles inside yourself and perhaps in the perceptions of the people around you.
Right. Yeah. And that's also a beautiful place, like where I also use my sex magic practice, right, to help transmute and transform that.
Yeah.
Because like we all have those places from various different things, right? You know, it could be trauma at birth, it could be trauma during childhood, you know, throughout life. I mean, honestly, let's like just look at the world around us. There's lots of opportunity for people to experience some type of trauma along the way that like has this set point, right? Of kind of like you said, like tolerance, right? Of where, like where we feel good. And if you're not accustomed to feeling good, right? Just a little bit more is going to feel so much better. And, you know, that's where like, when you were talking about like this idea of like settling, right? Like a lot of times we've become accustomed just to settling to good enough.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like there's this desire to want more, but we also don't necessarily think we can get more, right? So there's like this discrepancy we have within ourselves between our desires and where we want to go and what we're experiencing. And, you know, that's why like tapping into like these sacred practices is so important, because it really allows you to like transcend like that limited view of yourself and really get in contact with like what you truly want to create. It empowers you to actually go out and do it.
And I love that you talked about bringing sex magic to transmute trauma. This is something that I started doing personally and also teaching my clients about 13 years ago. And I have found it enormously powerful. I stumbled across it, actually. I was bereft about the death of a loved one. And I had been crying for about a month and I couldn't stop. And I thought, you know, maybe if I masturbated, I'd feel better. So I started to masturbate, but I couldn't stop crying. And I couldn't stop thinking about this loved one that had passed on. And I thought, well, this is inappropriate. Why would I be touching myself and thinking about this? But I decided to go with it. And I ended up having a beautiful orgasm, which was married to my grief. And I screamed and cried so hard. And then I was okay. It's like that orgasm took it to the next level where I could go deeper inside myself and really extirpate that grief and really let it out and scream it out and cry it out in a way that had finality to it, in a way that said, okay, now we're done.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful story.
Well, these are all the beautiful things we're missing out on around our beautiful sexuality and what its potential is, what it can do for us, healing us of a lot of things. It's sad to me that we don't know that culturally in the mainstream culture. I know there's pockets of us that do know that. Jenna, I want to ask you, how have you, I know you're interviewing me, but if I can just ask you, how have you used orgasm to heal trauma?
Yeah, so for me, it's shown up in allowing myself to be truly vulnerable and intimate with another person. So my background, I came from a narcissistic parent who did a lot and just like framing my self-concept of not being good enough, not lovable, feeling the need to be perfect. So I'd have this tendency to, you know, I want to hide, right, all the parts that like I would perceive as negative or disruptive, right, for somebody else, and only show them the parts that I thought were great or wonderful. And of course, when you're in an intimate relationship and you're hiding parts of yourself, right, it's impossible to feel fully connected and integrated. You know, in fact, like in sex magic, like as you progress, it's like you can't get any deeper unless as a woman, like you're willing to feel completely loved and adored and safe in that relationship. So for me, it's been a lot of work about really like learning to like reclaim and accept myself, you know, those parts of myself that's afraid of being rejected or afraid of being judged or criticized for maybe having a different view or having a different opinion. Some of it, you know, is like just things that like maybe I'm just afraid of. It's not like actually going to happen, but you know, that's where like tapping into like my pleasure and learning how to like, one, just like love myself through all of that, like really like allowed me just to like take the walls down, right? You know, and keep taking the walls down.
I think that you're mentioning, particularly for women, you know, human beings that have a body that has a vagina, I think there is a level of vulnerability. Now, certainly there can be that same vulnerability with rectum, but I'm going to speak on what I know because I've, you know, sex is not my thing. I've done it a few times, but I didn't like it. But I have a vagina. I was born with one. And I can feel very powerful there because I have a lot of powerful muscles and a lot of powerful desire and expression. But I can also feel incredibly vulnerable. Because if I'm having sexual intercourse with my partner or even just allowing their finger to go inside me, there's a way in which being penetrated to me is a very, very profound act of surrender. And particularly if you happen to be doing this with a male-bodied human being, they're probably bigger and stronger than you. And I'm a incest and rape survivor. And, you know, hashtag me too showed us that a lot of women have had instances of sexual harassment, sexual abuse. It don't necessarily have to be a rape survivor to understand what it means to be afraid living in a female body. And I thought, you know, women should get an award for their courage. Because having sex with a man to me is a way of saying I'm going to make myself vulnerable to a human being who probably is bigger and stronger than me. Obviously, I have encountered men who are not nearly as big and strong as I am, and I'm only a size 2. So they do exist, but they're rare. For the most part, being a size 2 and 5'4", the men are bigger than me and stronger than me. And for a lot of women, that's the case. It all comes down to something called sexual dimorphism, which means that the male of the species just tends to be a little bigger and capable of being more ferocious physically. So, but there's a primate that found a solution to that sexual dimorphism, which I think is fascinating. I'm just quickly mentioning it. It's a little off our topic, but I also think it's kind of on our topic because they're called bonobos. Some people have heard of them. They look like chimpanzees, but they're actually not. Chimpanzees are just horrifically violent, and they're super patriarchal. So they are organized by male power and male brute strength. They have infanticide, rape, murder, war, domestic violence. But their closest cousin, the bonobos, do not have any of those afflictions. And they are organized around a matrifocal society. I'm not going to say matriarchy because it's not the same. A matriarchy would be probably just as abusive and punitive. And they don't have war. They don't have infanticide. They don't have rape. They don't have murder. They don't have domestic violence. They just have none of that. Occasionally, they have squabbles. Once or twice, somebody's got a finger chewed off. And I gotta tell you something, losing a finger is a far cry from losing your face and your heart, which is what the chimpanzees do. So there really is no comparison between these two apes. The bonobos organize around female bonding sexually. So the females have sex with each other and then they become a very tight-knit troop. And the males don't dare cross them because they will defend themselves, but they're not offensive. They don't subjugate the males and try to batter them into submission. they just support each other and become a wall, an impenetrable wall that the males respect. And the males don't have a lot of cause to be angry and violent because they're just having sex with everybody, including each other. They're very pansexual creatures. There's lesbian sex, gay sex, heterosexual sex. There's a lot of sex. And they're very peaceful. So am I advocating that we all become bonobos and have the same type of sex as bonobos? I'm not. But I am saying, hey, human beings, there is a culture in existence right now today that doesn't suffer from the misogyny and the violence that we do. And their key to success was sex. And why is it that we have put the words sex and violence in the same phrase? We've demonized sex as somehow or another a path to ruination, when in fact, sex without shame, consensual adult sex, can actually create beautiful things on this planet. And I think we're missing out.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you so much, Veronica. Before we close, is there like one piece of wisdom that you want to give people that will help them, you know, connect on a deeper level in their relationships?
You know, there's two pieces, if it's okay with you.
Yeah.
I'd like to impart. The first is just around sex magic. When you are really evoking the power of your sexuality, it is possible to create an energetic space that could call in energies you don't want to communicate or commune with. And I just think it's really important to know that healthy boundaries apply on this side and on the other side. So I love something that Jacques Brachus, he's a medium, an evidential medium. I love something he told me. He said, it's not about incantations or meditations or, you know, special words that are going to protect you. He said, it's about changing your energy. So the more that you can heal the parts of you that are shame-based and fear-based, then your energy, and align your energy with things that are about love and light, then your magic is going to be truly elevating for you and everybody around you. So that's the first. And the second thing about relationship, it is difficult to merge with and have a sacred sexual relationship with someone that you have fear or resentment towards. And if you have been in a relationship for very long, there's probably some arguments that you thought, hey, it's not worth a fight, so I'll just forget it. But, you know, that stuff has a tendency to kind of get tamped down. And so what gets on top of it are more and more little things. And pretty soon they're kind of a big knot in your stomach. So I really recommend that if you start to have sex and you feel triggered or you feel frightened, pause. Pause the sex. Give each other permission to interrupt the sex and talk about your feelings and cry if you need to and hold each other. And, you know, if you don't end up having sex that night or that whatever time of day it was, it's okay. You'll do it again. And it'll be better because of the work that you put into sorting out your feelings. In my experience, my partner and I actually can spend even a whole hour working through our feelings and our triggers. And then we usually can't wait to start having sex again. So so sex should not be a runaway train. It should be a beautiful journey with twists and turns and a lot of curiosity and everything that you bring to it, your grief, your resentment, your anger, your fear, it's all welcome. Just be honest with yourself and with your partner about it. Find constructive ways to express yourself so that you don't hurt each other in the process, but be available for that. And it will take you some beautiful places.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for that, Veronica.
That was great. I really enjoy the space that you create and the space that you hold for this, Jen.
Thank you.